name is Rutena Nyamuda, and welcome to another very educational episode of In My 20s. In My 20s. So today is our 21st episode, which means we get the golden key and we're officially legal in every single country. Can anybody say international? So really excited to have our guest on the show. He is a phenomenal, extraordinary person, extraordinary human being with such a beautiful story. So without further delay, welcoming himself onto the In My 20s podcast and into the In My 20s family, here he is.
大家好，我的名字叫 Nsansa， 但是我的中文名字叫吉鲁伊。我觉得我自己是一个关于非洲和中国的 expert. Hi, my name is Nsansa Chinyangulube. My Chinese name is Ji Luyi. And I would like to think of myself as an aspiring China-Africa enthusiast / expert in the making.
Now, on every episode of the In My 20s podcast, my guests always come through with these phenomenal mind moments or gem moments. And this is just one of them.
A lot of people think that Chinese people here or Chinese people outside of China, mm-hmm. wherever they are, aren't very hospitable and they're closed off and whatnot. Mm. But people tend to underestimate what language or the kind of barrier that language or the inability to speak a language can create. Mm.
The In My 20s podcast is split up into three sections. In the first section, we're going to hear a little bit more about Nsansa's career journey. In the second section, we dive into today's topic, which is all about culture, customs, and Nsansa's experience in China. Then rounding up all three sections is a conversation about his 20s journey. So without further delay, let's get straight into it. Nsansa, your career journey and career history, like, okay. It is fascinating. But take us through the journey from, you know, where you're from, a bit of your background, what you studied, where you studied, and how you ended up where you are today.
Okay, sure. So I am originally from Zimbabwe. I was born there. Mm-hmm. And my family relocated to Johannesburg in 1993. And, you know, we've been there ever since, besides a 2-year stint in Germany. But then after matriculation, went to Cape Town, UCT. You were there too.
Yes.
Studied finance, finished that. And then I went and worked in the financial services industry as a investment consultant. Mm. And, you know, to be blunt, I hated it.
Okay.
It's funny because I knew from the second week I was there that it just wasn't going to work out.
Mm. What was it? Was it like the environment? Was it the people? Was it the work?
No. I think it was the work. And I think you need a certain kind of personality to do the whole finance thing.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, while I was still studying, you know, in Cape Town, I remember one of my finance courses, we started doing a lot of work regarding China. We started doing a lot of case studies regarding China and what China was doing in Africa and what China meant for the developing community, particularly because they were following this very aggressive growth trajectory.
Mm.
And, you know, it was somewhat of a miracle and no one actually knew where China was heading.
Mm.
So I think looking back in retrospect, that's where my interest started.
Wow.
In China. So while I was working in, you know, that financial services job that I hated.
No names mentioned, I see. It's so strategic.
You know it.
And financial, they will know. But yeah.
So while I was working there, I mean, whenever I'd have a free moment, I was always like reading articles, journals and whatnot about China and Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And my very first, I guess, idea or brainwave at that point in time was, you know, I've got a bit of money because I'm working. Why not look for a Chinese school or a Chinese teacher and learn Mandarin Chinese? Because the way things are going, it looks like they're going to be a very, I guess, important player in the global economy. So I ran a quick Google search, and it's funny because I didn't find a Chinese teacher, but what I found was a scholarship to go and study in China.
Oh, wow.
To either learn the language,
to
do your undergraduate degree, or to do a postgraduate degree.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, wow, you know, here's this opportunity.
Mm.
I may or may not get it, but let me just try either way.
Mm-hmm.
So I put in an application. I did the whole process.
Wow.
And the first round was just all, I guess, a digital application form, mm-hmm. as well as supporting documents, you know, like your usuals, like your transcripts, letters of recommendation. Mm-hmm. So I put through that application with all the supporting documents, and I kind of just let it go. And I was like, look, whatever happens, happens. Mm-hmm. Whatever doesn't, doesn't. And then fast forward a couple of weeks, I get invited for an interview. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, that's when things were actually like, oh, snap, like this could actually be a possibility.
Sure.
So I had to fly down to Joburg because the interview was at the Department of Higher Education and Training. Mm. So I literally flew down for one day just for that interview. Mm. Sat through the interview. It was probably one of the best interviews I've ever had.
Okay. What did they ask you? Like, how much Mandarin can you speak?
No, no. At that point, I couldn't speak anything.
Okay.
I could speak nothing at all.
Okay.
But I just had the interest. So they asked me a lot about, you know, things related to China, some current developments, current affairs related questions, all revolving around China.
Mm.
And because I'd been reading about the topic since university, it was, you know, it didn't feel like an interview, it just felt like a conversation.
Yes, yeah.
So I remember leaving that feeling really, really good about myself. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to Cape Town, back to that job.
At that place. With those people.
No shame, the people were amazing. Okay. They're actually the ones that got me through it.
Okay, okay.
So I went back and then didn't hear back from the Department of Higher Education and Training for a couple of weeks. Mm. And then next thing, I just got notification that I'd been selected for the scholarship.
Amazing.
And then all of a sudden, like, you know, things just had to happen. I had to leave Cape Town. I had to resign my job. I had to move out of my apartment in Cape Town. I had to sell stuff.
Wow.
All of that had to happen within a short period of time.
Wow.
And then I moved back to Joburg.
Yeah.
And then I was here in transit. And then I went to China. I remember everything happened so fast.
Mm.
And then before I knew it, I was on the plane going to China. And at this point, all I could say was ni hao, like, which is hi, okay. Right? I couldn't say anything else. Wow. And then I landed there, got picked up by a taxi driver, which the school had organized.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being in the taxi car, and I'd read before that, you know, in Chinese culture, hospitality is super important.
Mm.
So where you can, if you're offered something, you should try not to decline.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember sitting in the taxi, and then the taxi driver offered me a cigarette, and I don't smoke. But then I remember thinking, like, oh my word, if I say no, he might think I'm rude.
Mm-hmm.
So then I remember I took the cigarette and I started smoking it. And I remember I was coughing my lungs out in that taxi ride, and he was laughing. And in that moment, there's just like this realization that, like, okay, you know, you're doing this, it's happening.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, this is it. This is where the journey begins.
I love that. This is real, because it's kind of like, as you said, like, everything happens so quickly. You're just like, there's no time to think about it. It's like, I'm going.
Exactly.
Even the thought of, I think when people think about going overseas or studying overseas or exploring something different.
Yeah.
I don't know if China is the first place you think about.
That's the thing. And that's a question a question that a lot of people asked me and still ask me to this day.
So why China?
Why China? And I think it's particularly because of the role that they're playing in the global economy.
Okay.
If you look at what's happening, particularly in Africa with like FOCAC, with BRICS and all of that. By the way, FOCAC is the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation. The biggest stage where China basically formulates and plays out its Africa strategy.
Okay.
Yeah. So looking at all of that, it's very difficult to deny that the globe is pivoting towards the East.
Mm.
And then you look at what's happening in Europe, and you look at what's happening in, you know, North America. And these are economies that have traditionally been, I guess, the leading figures. And now all of a sudden there's this interesting development where you have this player from the East, being China, stepping up to the plate and offering alternatives to the rest of the world.
Mm.
And so that for me was like, okay, damn, this is going to be huge.
Yeah.
And I need to make sure that I position myself with where things are going.
But how has China become so powerful and so strong in Africa? But I also think it was done under the radar.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's actually a lot of information available out there on China's involvement in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people aren't aware of it, or rather people think it's happening underground just because, you know, they're not reading up on the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you look at, you know, some of the traditional, I guess, mainstream sources of media, they are your Western media brands, right?
Mm.
And a lot of them, it's in their interest to try and keep the China story as suppressed as possible.
Wow.
Because if you, I guess, let people onto the fact that China is growing in the world, then if China is growing, someone needs to be shrinking, right? If you look at the European and particularly the American involvement in Africa, it's definitely losing ground to China.
So, not to talk about race, but black man in goes China. To China.
Yeah.
I don't... First of all, how many other black people are in China that you saw? Okay.
In my region, not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I know China has a huge African population in the south, in Guangzhou, which is a city known for manufacturing. And a lot of Africans, particularly West Africans, go to Guangzhou to set up import-export businesses to send things back to Africa. Think electronics, think... clothing and apparel, textiles, all of that is facilitated mostly through the southern area of China. Where I was in the northeast, there weren't a lot of black people there, so you wouldn't see that many outside of the school. Even in, within the school, there weren't many.
So how did people react when they saw you?
Well, I mean, obviously people, they just like look, right? Like, okay, wow, there's a foreigner there. There's someone black there. Some people like take pictures. Some people ask if they can come take pictures with you.
Well, you're just like, no flash photography. What can I sign?
But it's interesting because I don't think that's just, I don't think that's like a black issue, because a lot of my foreign friends, even those who weren't black, experienced similar things. People just taking unsolicited pictures or asking for pictures. Or coming to you and asking you, like, why a specific feature of yours is different. Like, why is your hair like that?
Seriously?
Or is your, for example, a black girl with braids. Is this how your natural hair looks? Or, like, you know, how did you do that? How long did it take? If you wash your hair, does it come out? You know, things like that. I think it's all fueled from, you know, curiosity. But sometimes it can get annoying, especially when you have like pictures taken of you without people asking.
Like across the road and you've got this like zoom camera in.
And you just see this flash go off.
You're like, no. But my chat around that is like, what happens to those pictures? Like, do they put them on their walls? Do they put them on their Insta
feed? Girl, who knows? Who knows what happens to those pictures? And that's why I'm always like, okay, I mean, that's why I feel uncomfortable when that happens.
Your mom actually told us a very interesting story when I think she was going to like a massage parlor or a spa, and you started speaking to the ladies in Mandarin. And they were like so surprised. What is it like when you're in those environments and situations where you, you know, shock people?
It's so interesting because it just reminds me, before I answer that actually, a lot of people think that Chinese people here or Chinese people outside of China, wherever they are, aren't very hospitable and they're closed off and whatnot. But people tend to underestimate what language or the kind of barrier that language or the inability to speak a language can create. So a lot of them actually, their English isn't that great. So if you speak to them in English, already there's a barrier that they have to overcome just to connect with you. I found that if you speak to someone in their language, you are not only speaking to their heart, but you are in effect tearing down that language barrier that prevents them from, I guess, bringing their full self to the interaction. Which is why, you know, when I go to shops and I speak to the owners or the servers in Chinese, they, number one, become super enthusiastic, and then I'm always offered discounts and reduced prices, and I think that's just like a showing of their appreciation that I took time and effort to learn their language.
That's amazing. What are the similarities and differences between
the cultures?
I mean, you said you're born in Zim, raised in South Africa, and you know, the Chinese culture.
So what I found, it was actually quite interesting that there are a lot of similarities between, I would say, their culture and my culture. And when I say they, I specifically mean, so you get a lot of like dialects and minority cultures in China. But then if you're looking at the Han group, which is the majority group in China, I'm referring to that specific ethnicity, Han Chinese people. So there is a very big importance placed on respecting your parents and your elders, which I'm sure you know is something that, we're all used to. But I mean, seeing how that is performed was quite interesting because it was exactly the same as my culture. So for example, in eating, you let them dish first. whatever they say, you take that. You don't question them on that, even if they may be wrong.
Yeah.
You know, you have to just respect that their perspective is coming from, you know, experience and whatnot. Mm. There's certain things that you wouldn't do because it would, I guess, not embarrass, but like, or rather, let me say, you are taught to avoid where possible bringing shame to your elders.
100%.
You know, all of these things that we're used to, yes, to hearing about. And, yeah, you know, that was very interesting for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The respect and not questioning things is something very interesting that I've seen.
Yeah.
So different, especially in, you know, growing up in South Africa.
Yeah.
Some, you know, cultures or, mm-hmm, like they're of culture.
Yeah.
And you, but it's fascinating to have observed people yelling back at their parents.
Yeah, yeah.
I could never.
Same, never.
Never even think about
it. Yeah, yeah.
The thought is erased before it even comes to you.
Exactly.
And also, I mean, coming back to language, and I know you mentioned business earlier, what was fascinating for me to see is that Chinese is the most spoken language. I know you spoke about it as an umbrella. I think it was like 1.2 billion people speak it as a native. 1 billion of those speak Mandarin.
Yeah.
I think. And then second was Spanish.
Oh, wow.
And then third was English.
Mm.
And it's just like very interesting because I think naturally people think, oh, everyone speaks English or everyone speaks English as a second language, but it's not. And to your point about where people are going and where business is going, like, when it comes to it, you're just like, well, I can speak the language, which will separate you from the next person.
And it's funny that we're speaking about language because a lot of people, they say to me, oh, wow, you learn Chinese. So you've been colonized by the Chinese. And this, you know, the Chinese are like neo-colonizers in Africa. But then I think to myself, okay, how do you think you got to speak English? How do you think you got to this point of speaking English? Do you know what I mean?
Do you think you just woke up speaking
exactly.
English?
Exactly. I mean, this is an issue that goes all the way back in time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I always just say that, and it's funny to see the lights coming in people's eyes and be like, oh, you know, you're actually onto something.
Because
if you think about it, English didn't come from Africa.
Mm-mm.
It didn't.
No.
English did not come from Africa.
No.
But people tend to look at Chinese and look at it as a foreign language and think English isn't a foreign language.
Yeah.
Just wow. My
perspective.
Yeah.
Wisdom. And then like maybe rounding up and semi rounding up is, I know you spoke about some interesting, there was the cultural experience of you and your taxi driver.
Yeah.
What other interesting stories have you experienced, or what one experience were you like, oh my gosh, this is hectic?
Professionally or?
While you were in China. Either way. Yeah.
Okay, so professionally, like some of the biggest things that I was fortunate enough to experience in China was, number one, I got to participate in the Model BRICS Forum in Shanghai, which basically tried to recreate the BRICS Forum, which was happening that same year.
Oh, wow.
And then I also got to represent my university at the Model United Nations Conference in New York
in
2017. I was selected as one of two foreign students in a team of 12. So there were 10 local Chinese students. And then we went to New York and represented our university at the conference at the United Nations. That was really, really cool.
How was that experience?
That was amazing. That was amazing. That's actually, I think, when I really thought to myself, okay, look, you can actually take this China-Africa thing much further than you actually thought you could.
Mm.
So that actually was a life-changing experience for me.
Because that's the world. Like people's mindsets and mind views are only as big as what you've seen and what you've experienced, right? And to go that high, I mean, it's the UN.
Yeah,
You're not playing. You're not playing.
Exactly, yeah. So that was that.
Mm-hmm. And then personally?
Personally, there's just been so many different stories.
I love the look on your face right now. You're like having flashbacks.
I'm trying to figure out which ones are appropriate for your podcast.
PG-related ones. No, give them all.
Non-PG-related ones. Yeah, obviously non-PG-related. I would probably say... So I have a really good friend that I made in China. His English name is Frank.
Okay.
And his family comes from a village area.
Mm-hmm.
So he was at my university. His family comes from a village area. And this guy's like super, super smart.
Okay.
You know, got a scholarship to study university and whatnot, which was like great given, you know, the background of his family.
Mm-hmm.
So he invited me back to, you know, his home village.
Mm.
And I went there and it was so interesting to see, because obviously, you know, I know African village life, mm. rather like, you know, Zimbabwean village
yes,
life.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just so interesting to see how what they considered the village there just didn't look like what I thought a village would look like,
mm.
if that makes sense.
Describe
just because
it?
They're just very, creative in trying to like find solutions to typical village problems. So,
okay.
for example, in the house or the structure that they live in, the bed, it's kind of like constructed. So the base is constructed out of concrete.
Mm-hmm.
But underneath the bed is like a furnace where they keep burning wood.
Okay.
And it keeps the surface of the bed warm
oh,
and
wow.
hot.
Oh,
so
wow.
you sleep on top of that and it's literally so warm at night.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, they put like a thin mattress.
Yeah.
But you sleep on that and you would... Just like that amount of warmth
wow.
just was... It was just like mind-blowing. And I know I'm probably not making sense, but just
nice.
There's that. And then also the sense of community where people would just come together and cook and eat together.
Oh, wow. I could
yeah.
do with that. Especially
yeah.
being a 20-something-year-old. It's better now. My
yeah.
finances are better now.
Mine is still
wow.
a low-key struggle.
It's always a struggle. It's always
yeah.
a struggle. That is amazing.
Mm.
That is amazing.
And I think a lot of it just comes down to just like... Look, Chinese people are very... They're proud people.
Mm.
And regardless of the circumstances, they always put their pride
mm.
first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's very rare to find, to see someone begging,
okay.
you know, yeah.
And yeah, it's just, it's interesting because I think it also comes down to the human connection.
Sure,
and,
sure.
and the humanity of being human. At
yeah.
the base of everything, it's this idea that you have community, you have
yeah.
family, you have this culture.
And that's the core of Confucianism,
mm.
of the Confucius, I guess, thought system,
mm.
is that, you know, we're all connected. And the family structure, community structure is central to everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Beautiful. Amazing. So
yeah.
what are you doing at the moment? How did you get into what you're doing at the moment?
Yes.
And why are you speaking Chinese?
So so right now I'm working for a consulting firm.
Mm.
I guess I shouldn't mention the name of the company, right?
I mean, if it's an impositive, right?
So I'm working at Deloitte.
Mm-hmm.
And the division I'm working at is specifically called Deloitte Africa and Emerging Markets.
Mm.
So within that, I fulfill three roles. Number one is research.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is I am in charge of Deloitte Africa's China desk,
mm.
Which is basically how we facilitate business coming through from China.
Okay.
And then my third role is business development. So any clients interested in pursuing business in Africa in certain industries,
mm.
we take them to those countries and kind of put together an investment roadshow for them.
Okay.
And introduce them to key players within their industry.
Okay.
So last year in July, we took some big automotive clients to Nigeria.
Mm.
This year we're taking some other automotive clients, but to Ethiopia because
mm.
there are opportunities there. So yeah, in terms of the Chinese clients, a lot of that is basically facilitating their, intentions to break into Africa.
Mm. So in terms of what advice or what, you know, would you leave people, what would you say to them when it comes to China and understanding China?
I would say go in with an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
Go in with an open mind. And where possible, leave your prior beliefs or convictions at the door.
Mm.
And just be open. So. That's what I'd say. Just be open. I would really urge them to take a look at what's happening
mm.
and, you know, broaden their horizon and know that there are different stories out there.
Mm.
There are alternatives out there.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything is, you know, the West,
yeah.
as we've, you know, all grown
yeah.
up to believe. And particularly when it comes to like studying and furthering your education,
mm.
look, going to the UK, going to Europe, going to the US, that's great. But also just be aware that there are other alternatives.
Mm.
And also the world is shifting gears.
Mm. Give us a summary of what your 20s journey has been from that moment you hit that 2-0.
When I first hit my 20s, That's second year, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So at that point, I was convinced I was going to be a CA because, you know, coming from high school, everyone's like, you know, you need to be a CA if you don't really know what you're going to do or what you want to do.
Casual.
Yeah, because everyone seemed to have this belief that being a CA would give you like options in life and that you could learn things about different businesses while doing auditing.
Mm-hmm.
And also a lot of people used to talk about the paycheck, the CA paycheck.
Okay.
So I was doing that. And I didn't really like it. The fact that I wasn't really fully engaged was reflecting the way that my marks weren't as good.
Mm.
I mean, they weren't bad, but they're just like average.
Mm-hmm. You weren't getting A's. You were getting B's.
Not even, girl. And it just didn't seem like something I could see myself doing.
Mm.
So, you know, I was confused as to what I wanted to do. And then I ended up just changing to finance.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to that job. And even then I was like, okay, is this what I really want to be doing?
Yeah.
And I had a lot of friends who continued with the CA thing. Mm. And they were like, you know, you were going to be earning money. Mm. And everyone's just talking about like this money thing. And then I got to a point where I was like, okay, look, money is fine, but there are different ways to get there.
Yes.
And that's actually when I decided to like break out and do my own thing.
Mm.
So my 20s for me have really been characterized by just breaking away from what's expected of me.
Because
I remember even when I broke away from that, like I got a call from my dad telling me like, if you continue with this, like if you don't do CA thing,
yes,
X number of years, you'll be working for one of your classmates.
Oh, wow.
that was his quote, actually.
Really?
I wonder if he remembers that. I must ask him. But yeah, he told me, because I remember I called him and I was like, yeah, I'm no longer pursuing the CA thing. And he was like, okay, that's fine. But, you know, as your father, it's my duty to tell you that if you don't become a CA, X number of years from now, you'll be working for one of your classmates.
Yeah, I hate it. And what did you say to that? Like, what was your response?
Well, I mean, I knew that he comes from a certain generation. First of all, my dad, when he finished his master's degree, he worked for the same company from that point up until like 2016, I think.
Yeah.
So he's one of those like long service people, and he worked his way up to end up being CEO of Africa for that company.
Mm.
So I knew that his way of understanding careers and career growth and whatnot is completely different from where things are going now in this new age. So I really wasn't expecting him to be, you know, on board from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting now, because when I speak to him and, you know, we chat about like what I've done, you know, where I've been and where I am now, he sees it now.
Yeah,
he sees that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, they wait for others to see the vision before they make the decision, and I'm so thankful that I wasn't one of those people. And I just had that conviction back then and did what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Two amazing things you've just said is one on the money thing, and I know even studying what I studied, media, people always said, but what are you going to do? You're going to be a struggling artist. And I know people said it off the cuff, like a joke thing, but they really meant that if you're not studying to be a CA or a lawyer or a doctor or a conventional career, also with the mindset of what our parents thought were good conventional careers, that you wouldn't make it. But you also have to forge your own path.
That's
and make
true.
Your own way at the end of the day. And then also on what you said about vision, which was beautiful, is I think that God has given us all visions for our lives and all dreams, but he didn't tell the next person. Like,
exactly.
Why would they know what you've been told in secret, right?
There it is.
So that's always, and trying to explain it. So that's why they say sometimes, especially when your idea or a dream is so small, be so careful who you share that with, because they'll tell you all the reasons why it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And you need to keep pushing. And that's what you did. I mean, going to China, it's not like, hey, I went to... if you had said you had gone to the UK or America or something that was very much in the West, anyone would have gone, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But now you're like, I'm going to China. Like, and I'm sure people were like,
No, yeah, a lot of people actually told me I was crazy and that I was gonna really regret it. And there was a point where I let that get to me, because I came back. And so now I had this master's degree from China.
What is your master's in?
It was in international relations.
Okay.
I had this degree and then I was applying for jobs.
Mm.
And a lot of recruiters, they didn't get it.
Mm.
A lot of them were looking at me like I was crazy. Like, okay, like this doesn't make sense. Like, okay, everything else makes sense. But then there's this China thing.
Wow.
Why is that? And then eventually I ended up having an interview with my current boss.
Mm.
And he, firstly, he did his, I think his PhD in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the first, I guess, players in the China-Africa space.
Wow.
He has been involved with China-Africa for a number of years now.
Mm.
And so when I had an interview with him and we just chatted about this thing, the first thing he told me was, look, recruiters here in South Africa, they're not going to get it.
Yeah.
They're not going to get it.
Wow.
So, you know, you shouldn't be surprised that was an issue.
Mm.
I never really knew where things were going, but I just followed the feeling.
Mm.
And it was messy
mm.
because there was no set or predefined path.
Yeah.
So I look at my friends who did the CA thing. For them, they had exams and benchmarks each year. So they knew they could benchmark their progress.
Mm.
But I had no idea where I was going, what it was going to amount to, if it was going to amount to anything.
Mm.
I just had to trust that it felt good and it felt right.
Sure.
Yeah.
And look at you now. Look at you now. Pioneering. That's the thing, is you're pioneering. That's the thing about pioneering. There's no path. And that's why I think it's very difficult. The people who I've spoken about spoken to, like yourself, who are doing their own thing, it's scary and it's tricky, and you probably find yourself crying more times than you should, and you're frustrated, and you're like, what is happening?
And you're so unsure.
But there's no path. You are literally creating that path for the next person who's like, oh, Nhlanhla did it, I'm going to follow. Yeah, you're the one shoveling.
I hope so.
Mm, I believe that.
Thank you.
So let's talk about quarter life crisis.
Okay.
Hit me. Have you experienced the quarter life crisis? Believe it or not, some people haven't. I'm shook.
Yeah.
What was your quarter life crisis and how did you come out of it?
So I think I experienced my quarter life crisis actually at 25 years old when I was at that job.
Mm-hmm. And, I love the way you say that job.
Yeah. Because at that point I was like, okay, you know, maybe my dad was right. I'm going to end up working for one of my CA friends and whatnot. So I was just like, I don't know, a part of me was like, you know, maybe I should have studied this, I shouldn't have studied this, maybe I should have been like more strategic back in matric about what I wanted to do and been more, you know, careful in terms of my planning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I just looked back at my past decisions and thought, you know, I could have done more.
Mm.
Because those past decisions are actually what led me to where I was at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, that was actually kind of like a rough period.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I touched on before, that's actually when the whole like China thing opened up. Or rather, that's when I gained the conviction to actually pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the coming out of it, I guess, was you felt uncomfortable and you were still like, let me move in the direction that I feel is good.
Yeah, because at that point I felt like I was at rock bottom and it couldn't get any worse.
Okay.
And it's funny because I say rock bottom, but I had a job, a paying job. I had a roof over my head.
Mm.
I had, you know, clothes on my back and, you know, all those things that would make a comfortable life. Right.
Mm.
So with that in mind, I really also felt kind of like, I don't know. I felt like I didn't have a right to feel like I was in a crisis because I had all those things, right?
Mm.
So it was also very confusing.
Yeah. But I found as like millennials, our generation, money is not top of our pyramid.
Exactly.
It's fulfillment.
That's the thing.
And you're searching for something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly it. Is you were not fulfilled on a holistic, spiritual, this is purpose.
Yeah.
It was the purpose shake, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I just felt like, okay, look, this is probably as bad as it can get.
Mm.
And when I say bad, I mean like feeling unfulfilled without a purpose. And then before I continue, it's strange because I didn't feel like I could use those reasons to explain to my parents.
No, you can't.
Why?
Smart move.
Yeah, exactly. I knew I couldn't use those reasons to explain to them why I wanted to leave where I was.
They'll say, what do you mean unfulfilled?
Exactly. You know those conversations. I mean, what do you mean unfulfilled?
Is fulfillment going to pay for your salary?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
So I knew that the onus was on me to fix the situation.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, I mean, I guess in summation, is what advice would you leave for, you know, people in their 20s at the moment?
It's never too late. Mm. That's what I have to say to them. It's never too late. If you have that feeling that you aren't where you need to be, And, you know, you listening out there, you'll know exactly what feeling I'm talking about. Just know that it's never too late. And the more that you ignore the feeling, the louder it gets.
Mm.
And that's just your life trying to direct you towards where you should be. And you should always, always remember that it's never too late.
So it is the 21st episode of the In My 20s podcast. And I must make a confession. These are my confessions. Out of all the episodes of the In My 20s podcast thus far, I have never felt such a yearning and a need to read more of the of what's happening in the news and to watch the news. But just for food for thought, guys, I think you should also read up on China's involvement in Africa and China's involvement in the global economy and the impact, because ultimately these are things that affect us and impact us more than we actually think. And just imagine this moment. Imagine this moment. This weekend, you're going to be chilling with your friends. You're going to be, you know, having a good time, catching up on things. You'll probably most likely talk about celebrity news and celebrity gossip and who's hating and who's dating. But imagine this moment where you pause and you say to them, guys, you know what I've been thinking about lately is China's involvement on the African economy and China's involvement on the global economy and the impact. What are your thoughts on that? And see what they say. Just see what they say. Just see what they say and then let us know. Otherwise, thank you so much again, Nhlanhla, for coming onto today's show, for shedding light and ultimately doing what this podcast is meant to do. This podcast is supposed to be a platform for not only entertainment and engagement and conversation, but for education and enlightenment. So thank you so, so, so much for that. So we'll catch you same time, same place, right here on In My 20s. In my 20s, in my 20s. How old are you? I am Warchai Ashadua Sweat. Translation, I am in my 20s. Okay, bye.